This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Meera Sivasuthi. Addiction exerts a long and powerful influence on the brain that manifests in three distinct ways for the object of addiction: loss of control over its use and continuing involvement with it despite adverse consequences. And in view of World Mental Health Day, in the studio with me are Dr. Hazli Zakaria. He's the Honorary Secretary of the Malaysian Psychiatric Association, together with Jesslyn Tan. She's the Vice Chairperson of the World Mental Health Day Campaign on Addiction from Help University, am I correct?
Yes.
Welcome to the show, both of you. How are you today?
Oh, very good. Very good. Fantastic.
Nobody starts out, you know, intending to develop an addiction, Dr. Hazli, but many people get caught in it, snare-like. Dopamine is very much the cause of this. Could you just explain to me the role of dopamine and how it, you know, contributes towards addiction?
Okay. Thank you for having us today. Thank you. We are so appreciate this effort because I think the addiction is common, but I think people still miss perception about addiction. People still think that this is a social problem, radical problem. I'm so happy when you mentioned about dopamine, because dopamine is a chemical inside our brain. It's a neurotransmitter which is responsible for in the reward system, mm-hmm. of the part of the brain which, yeah. This neurotransmitter to work so that we feel good about ourselves, mm-hmm. about our environment. So this is when there is dopamine that we will feel, you know, the euphoric feeling. We feeling good about something when we do it's a matter when we are when we're doing something, when we feel good about it, meaning that dopamine is doing his job.
Yeah, it's a pleasure experience,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But then again, after some time, they've found out that it also plays a role in learning and memory. And yes, that's when it has contributed towards addiction.
Oh, very, very, very true.
Yeah. Would you like to explain that to me?
Okay, besides dopamine, there are other several neurotransmitters that involve, like serotonin. Dopamine is one of the main neurotransmitters that involve in pleasurable. And then also involve in the memory, you know, that the storage of the memory and then recall of the memories. And then when we know that when we have the first time or the first incident when we that create a lot of pleasurable sensation, mm-hmm. we tend to remember vividly about the place where we have it, you know, with whom that we have the conversation. So this memory, in fact, will for us to have the pleasurable sensation or the feeling. So that is the reason why some people who are having addiction problem, they're having difficulties to really separate from their environment. It's easy for them to go back to their habit once they're being exposed to the same environment again. So this is the role of memory and how it relates to addictive behavior.
That's right. And that's where the problem lies, isn't it?
Exactly,
trying to break that addiction. In history, has addiction faced, like, I mean, it used to be alcohol, then it was drugs, then it still is pornography, you know, and has it changed very much, in your opinion? I mean, we've got internet addiction, we've got all sorts of rubbish now. Addictions, you know, has that made your life more difficult, Dr. Hazli?
Yeah, I would say that it's not really totally changed in terms of it, but it's, you know, that we are being exposed to many things that make us feel good, make increase the pleasurable activity. So I think it's in future we are going to see more and more new things that make us excited about. So then now the focus is not just on the chemical or substance addiction, a lot of behavioral addiction, as you mentioned just now, yeah. the shopping, you know, the pathological gambling.
Shopping.
Yeah. But again, the concept of the, some people consider that it's not true addiction, but actually the principle is still the same. When we caution, when we lost the ability to control our behavior, and then the compulsive acting, yeah. of continue do that as feel good. So, and we lost the control of that. Mm-hmm. So that the addiction will appear.
And it seems to be portrayed as a male disease, addiction, Dr. Hazli. I see you don't look very happy about saying that. Maybe it used to be, I don't know, I mean, with alcohol.
For the addiction. Chemical, yeah. For the chemical addiction, it used to be a male predominantly, because I think that where it's a nature of the man. It's much more adventurous. They're going to try. It's a new thing that may feel good. I think in the first phase, yes, it's a voluntary. After that, it become involuntary anymore. Then men, you tend to, because of the adrenaline rush, the peer pressure, I mean, the involvement of other people, so they tend to try many things to make them feel good, for example. Mm-hmm. And then, but nowadays, the ladies also try to pick up, for example, the smoking nicotine addiction. Nowadays, that ladies is also tried, men in Malaysia is...
We're trying. It's just happening. You know?
Yeah, alcohol is another thing that is not...
I mean, nobody sets out indulging in alcohol or, you know, even smoking, thinking that it would become an addiction.
Yes.
As you said, it is the feel good, feeling, after which it affects your learning and memory, and that's when it becomes the problem, isn't it?
That's the issue with most of the behavior addiction, because it seems like socially acceptable. For example, the internet, it give a lot of benefit to us, but once we cross the line, it become dysfunction, out of control, and then it become an issue. So to say that, I'm sorry, I missed the question again.
Yeah, so, in the sense that it has become, as you were saying, women are also affected by it.
Yes.
In fact, just not internet. I mean, when you think about our smartphones, a lot of us, I think, would be on the borderline of being addicted to constantly checking our smartphones and to check if we've got mail or what's happening on Facebook, you know.
Yes.
What is the most, what troubles you most about addictions in this country?
The concept of addiction itself, still, I mean, some people still consider this is just because of you're not able to control it. This is your loss of willpower. So we separate it from, I'm not trying to label it's a medical issue. I think, no, this is a condition which needs both attention from biological perspective and also from the social perspective. In order for us to curb this issue, so the policy should not isolate that this is a social issue or this is the behavioral problem. It's a combination of those. So the concept needs to be right. And then we also have to look that nowadays we are still, you know, for the substance or chemical addiction, still very much involved from the point of criminal or justice system rather than rehabilitation, which I think we should further emphasize the role of intervention that can help the person. What I'm trying to say is, for the example, if this person who having this addiction problem was entered the criminal system, for example, in prison, we have to look into the way to help them by giving a proper treatment rather than just detain them in the system without any proper intervention to help them come back to the real world later.
We'll talk about intervention in just a short while, but you know, Jesselyn, welcome to the show. I've completely ignored you all this time. You are Vice Chairman of the World Mental Health Day campaign at Help University. I mean, how did that idea come about, and why did you think that there was a need to come up with such a campaign? And this is Breaking Your Addiction Awareness campaign.
Yeah, true. Last year, we have this World Mental Health Day campaign in our university too. And last year, the theme was depression, suicide. And this year, we came up with a theme called addiction. And because we believe, as a psychology student, we want to contribute back to the society. And this is the way that we can contribute back to the society with what we have learned. Mm-hmm. Our chairperson, Johnson... he has an uncle that is addicted. It's an addict. Yeah, so we came up with this addiction theme for this year because you said just now, like technologies and all this stuff is coming like right over in this area. Can I say like this? Yeah, mm-hmm. Technologies, addiction, smartphone, internet, and all it. Most of us as a young adults or teenagers will encounter these issues as well.
Right.
And we want to spread this awareness to the public as a young adults or teenagers or family members and all.
Okay. How successful was last year's campaign?
We did it at eCurve, and it was quite happening that time. Mm-hmm. We have the experiential exhibition last year, and we get a lot of good feedbacks from the public.
Okay, all right then. So we're discussing breaking your addiction. It was World Mental Health Day, and we have Dr. Hazi Zakaria, who's the Honorary Secretary of the Malaysian Psychiatric Association, as well as Jesslyn Tan. She's the Vice Chairman of the World Mental Health Day Campaign on Addiction. And of course, just joined us, Dr. Eugene T, who's been on the show before, psychology lecturer and advisor on the addiction campaign. When we come back, we'll find out more. If you have a question for them, send it through. The number is 016-201-9000. Or tweet to BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture, and it's Meera Sivasuthi. It was World Mental Health Day, and Help University is actually organizing a Breaking Your Addiction Awareness Campaign. With me joining in the second half of the show, Dr. Eugene T. He's a business psychology lecturer, advisor as well for the addiction campaign, together with Dr. Hazli Zakaria. He's the Honorary Secretary of the Malaysian Psychiatric Association, and Jesslyn Tan. She's the Vice Chairman of the World Mental Health Day Campaign on Addiction. You know, we have a question here from Adam Lee, and Adam Lee is asking, I always thought that loneliness was the culprit for addiction. What's your take on that, Dr. Hazli?
Thank you for the question. I think that's very important to bring it up regarding the involvement of emotion in making or in starting the addiction or continue using or abusing it. Because we know that sometimes the addiction can be a way of self-medicating. Alcohol, for example.
Temporary.
Because they feel boredom, they feel lonely, and then they use that to, because, you know, they create a painful experience for them to feel the loneliness, the boredom. So by taking the substance can soothe their emotion away. So then when they continue doing that, remember the dopamine will start to surge, and then we need to continue doing the same thing to maintain the dopamine level. Otherwise, we're going to start having the withdrawal symptoms or feel very uneasy about it. So most of the time, the initial part is for having the euphoria or the pleasurable activities. Later, the reason the behavior continue because to avoid from having discomfort from not having enough dopamine to sustain the pleasure.
Right, and then you start to increase your dose of anything and everything consuming.
Yes.
You know, I've always wondered, psychiatrist as well, or as opposed to the psychologist, there's a very fine line between what both of you do and how to make a distinction. Eugene, what's your take on the Adam's question on the loneliness bit, you know, in relation to addiction? And do we start with a psychologist before we move on to a psychiatrist?
Well, Adam, I think that's a very important question. I think you're right, Meera. I think there's always a fine line in between the psychiatrist and the psychologist and how we actually view it.
I always say the psychiatrist dispenses medicine, the psychologist doesn't.
That's
but there's
one,
much more to the story than
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's much more. Much more to it.
I agree with what Dr. Hasley has said. In terms of the need for that dopaminic for fulfillment, in a very chemical sense. But I think loneliness, very interesting, Adam, that you brought it up, because it's very, it's a psychological issue in which people feel detached, they feel aside, they feel sometimes an outcast from, say, the social circles. And one way to actually fill that gap, that feeling of loneliness, is to seek that kind of comfort, be it temporary, from substances. Substances such as alcohol, could be drugs, and even to the extent of which people indulge in the use of internet pornography, for instance.
Yeah.
Right. So to feel that loneliness, to feel that sense that something is able to provide for me, to actually temporarily numb that feeling of loneliness, it's addictive. It can be addictive, of course, and the problem becomes when people continuously seek higher doses of such stimuli in order to fill the need for that substance, and of course to overcome their loneliness.
Right. So if we feel, when do we know we're actually suffering from an addiction, Dr. Hazli?
Okay. Good, because most of the time, the people who are having a problem, they don't realize they have a problem, but people around them, people who are close to them, will tell that something is not right. And so, not the person themselves, but people who are close to them, their employer, for example, noticing that they are missing from work, for example, their friends noted that this person started to consume more than they're supposed to in terms of alcohol, for example. So we know when our life is not in is how it used to be, when it started to cause problems, when we're having not just in workplace but also in a relationship, with friend, with our family members. Usually the family members and close friend is the, I would say, the one who tell us you need to do something right about your addiction.
So do you start with the psychologist or do you go straight to the psychiatrist?
Okay, I would say that you should see a professional. It doesn't matter who
but
the person is.
But both of you are professional,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah. Including the, like, you can, to start with the point of entry, yeah, it can be general practitioner, it can be counselor, mm-hmm, it can be psychologist. And then, but every one of us have a role to play, and then it's more like you know that, and the pie is we need to share. And then in certain issues, certain professional will do a better job than others.
Okay.
However, for example, for those who come to see me, I will ensure that I will rule out any medical problem to start with. For example, I will rule out any thyroid problem or any physical pain that which make this person continue taking the substance as a way of medication. And then I will try to rule out any psychological or psychiatric issues as well. For example, it can be anxiety. You know that someone who have a prominent or severe generalized anxiety disorder, they use alcohol as a way to escape or to make them more confident to face their daily activities. And maybe depression, again, the loneliness just now is just a milder form of depression. Or there is some social issues like maybe a marital discord, maybe someone probably in work with a counselor, and psychologists can play a role. For example, for those who are having a very poor self-esteem, a lack of self-confidence, mm-hmm, and unable to perform, and then the psychologist can play the role very much better than us. People always thought that when they come to see psychiatrists, they will be given medication for sure, mm-hmm, but it's not true.
And
we also can
fix.
Can offer psychological intervention, but most of the time we have to rule out the medical problem, and then we refer to the appropriate professional according to what the issue that need to be addressed first.
Okay, Jesselyn, I mean, based on, you know, friends at school and, you know, the people that, you know, you're with in university, mm-hmm, do you see addiction problems on the rise or of concern to you?
I guess to me, in university area or university students, mostly what we can say it's technology, like what in internet, Facebook, smartphone and handphones, because everyone of us has smartphone, mm-hmm, and then we tend to use smartphone very frequently,
yep,
even when eating, talking to friends. And these smartphones leads all of us, like, less communicate between each other face to face.
But that doesn't mean it's an addiction. It doesn't quite mean it's an addiction.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Do you think it's a problem? I mean, do you know of people who have gone to seek help?
Not really. Not much people will really step out and to meet professionals for help if they have these issues.
Right.
And that's why our campaign, we aim to encourage people who have addictions to step forward and seek for help as well.
Mm-hmm. What about preventive measures? I mean, Eugenia, at the university, I mean, you can do a lot, mm-hmm, to prevent the problem from coming about in the first, mm-hmm, place. And what do you do to prevent that?
Absolutely. I think it really depends on the nature of what addiction or what kind of substance dependence is actually being faced by the community of interest or anyone who's actually facing such addiction problems. With, obviously, substance abuse, we do suggest some form of counselling and some form of psychological intervention as well.
Mm-hmm.
But even before that, I think it starts with creating that awareness of when something becomes an addiction, when something becomes a substance which you depend on. And one of the key indicators is that if you withdraw from your usage of such substances and you feel, well, moody, you feel that you cannot function with it, so identifying that would be the first key step. Well, obviously, Across that point, we do have counseling and psychological interventions which will help get this person.
So I need to put away my smartphone for a couple of hours and see how I react. If I do, in fact, am moody and having some kind of symptoms, I need to come and get some help. And how will you treat me, Dr. Hasley? I mean, if I do have an addiction to my smartphone.
Yeah, I will spend 1 or 2 hours with you, try to find out the situation first, get the assessment done first, whether, as you said, whether it's truly addiction, just a way people who would more friendly with their smartphone rather than the addiction, you know. And then usually I will look for underlying issues that may associate with the behavior. For example, just now, the loneliness, yeah, more towards the issues that we can do something about it. For example, the lack of social skill, which can be done easily by having a better social skill.
But don't you see lot more of that happening with all of us glued to our smart gadgets?
Exactly.
And as Jasmine said, all of us not mixing because we are so busy communicating. Do you foresee that being a huge problem?
Yeah, in fact, in Korea, you know, where Samsung is, I mean, it's coming from, I think they, in fact, they come up with a scale to assess whether we are smartphone addicted to smartphone. They have the questionnaire that you can fill up yourself and then see whether you can you have the illness or not. And then there is some kind of worrying, because it's not just the smartphone, but we know that something is coming in future, how to avoid it. In Thailand, for example, they provide a guideline when the children should, I mean, when is the cut off age toddler, for example, for the young children, when they can watch TV, for example, use iPad, because they found that the earlier we expose to them, the higher risk for them to be, you know, to be dependent on the tools. So, but even though this is just a guideline, whether the enforcement, whether people follow it, that's another issue. Because, as I said, the smartphone, there are a benefit, there are advantage of it.
Yep. Everything has its benefit, really.
Yeah.
If abused, then it becomes a problem. Earlier on, you mentioned Dr. Hasley, and I thought that was very interesting in that we have a problem in this country, criminal justice versus rehabilitation. Could you give me examples of how we can improve the system to help people with addiction?
Okay. I'm old enough to see, you know, that the campaign War Against Drug, you know, that we have this battle against substance dependence, yeah?
Yeah.
But that is how the system changed. Now we are moving towards cure and care, for example, rather than send the person to the rehabilitation, to the Pusat Serenti. We offering them a treatment to help them reduce or eliminate their substance dependence. You know, the substitution program which using methadone and suboxone, which provided by the Ministry of Health and also Ministry of Home Defense through AADK. So besides, the concept of put them into the detention center, instead of bring them to the clinic and then give a treatment, that show how slowly we have changed from the fire. We have made a very important change from criminal to medical and rehabilitation over the last, I think, about the last 20 years,
right?
We have done that.
It was interesting because just a couple of days ago, I had a friend who came up to me and said, look, I have a brother-in-law who's married with two very young children, lives in Sarawak, has a glue-sniffing problem. And this glue-sniffing problem has been there for years on end. And every time he gets caught by the police, and then he's released, and the problem never ever gets solved. So he's asking me, you know, is there any way? I mean, and of course, finances comes into the picture. If it's a psychiatrist, can you afford to see a psychiatrist? If it's a government program, how do we go about? You know, if you do have a loved one or a family member who you know has an addiction, where do you even start?
Okay, there's a very important, and it's a little bit complicated to answer in a very simple way. But I think to start with, again, this is a medical condition which the person that need to be seen first is a general practitioner, which then can refer to appropriate person, for example, psychiatrist, for further manage this case. For example, the glue sniffing, the problem with glue sniffing compared to heroin, at least we have substitution for that, which is methadone and suboxone, as I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. whereas glue sniffing, we don't have any substitution to make it much safer rather than continue having this glue sniff to get the same effect. The same scenario for the amphetamine, you know,
yes.
that now there is instead of heroin, the substance that people usually abuse is amphetamine-like substance, which we don't really have a good substitution to make this person stop the withdrawal symptoms and then help them to have a better life or better lifestyle rather than involved in looking and start to look for the amphetamine and then to continue the behavior. Because we, as I mentioned earlier, the reason people looking for the substance because they want to avoid withdrawal symptoms. Even though amphetamine-like substance, they don't cause much withdrawal symptom, but they cause some kind of psychological dependence where they're having this craving and then they want it. It's not as strong as heroin, but they still have it.
Okay, so in terms of government, I mean, is there a channel that you can go through?
Yeah, so I think Ministry of Health provide is going to have the, they call it the addiction one-stop center for addiction. So not just heroin, but include any kind of addiction, for example, amphetamine, glue, and then some behavioral addiction. However, this in the process of setting it up. At this moment, we have the clinic specifically or focusing on the heroin first. Later on, it's going to include people who are having alcohol problems, nicotine problems, and including the glue sniffing. And then the treatment is not just about medical treatment. They need also to include the psychological input. Yep. For example, involve the psychosocial intervention like counseling, educate the family, because we cannot just treat this person alone without the help of the family members. They need to know how it works and then how they can help this person go back to their previous life and then to recover from having this problem. But we also have to educate the public that this is a chronic relapsing illness. What I mean by this is going to be for the rest of this person's life, the difficulties to away from the substance. Yeah. And they may have the time where they use the substance again, but it doesn't mean that they go back to addiction. Mm-hmm. They're just another lapse, not relapse. So the family members have to understand that and continue their support. And then the person himself or herself also need to understand that so they don't be frustrated when they start using the substance again or start involved in the behavior again. And then they say, oh, no, I'm useless.
That's right.
I'm hopeless. So the idea is it's not just one medication or one way of dealing with this. It needs a lot of support from different agencies, but we need to start from one of the person or the contact that I think should be the first one is the clinic in the community where people just can go walk in and get treatment.
Right, okay. But there's a stigma attached to this, which I'll come back to. But Eugene, I mean, as a psychology lecturer, has the syllabus taken into account the evolving face of addiction? Has that mattered at all? Or do the, you know, crux of psychology remain the same for addiction?
I think as we progress and as we move on, there will be updates based on additional research, additional understandings of what we understand about the nature about addiction, and I think it's new and interesting that we've also and started to accommodate technology addiction, for instance. So is the sense of being overly dependent towards your tech devices, what's that doing to the way in which we communicate with people? What's that doing to the way in which we interact with people? So definitely the syllabus has been continuously updated to reflect such new findings, such new scientific evidence about the nature of addiction. Yeah. And this is all geared towards developing interventions, be it medical or psychosocial or psychological in nature, which will help combat that addiction.
Kumar is asking, do our genes have a role in addiction?
Yeah, yes.
The simple answer
is yes. But we have to remember that the gene also can be influenced by the environment. Mm-hmm. So you know, whether the gene is going to be manifested or going to be expressed, it really depend on the event happened to that person's life, for example. Of course, the genetic provide the vulnerability for this person to develop addiction, but that's not the only reason why this person develop addiction. They need a few other ingredients to make it appear or develop.
Which probably answers, I mean, Yuvraj is saying, you know, you've spoken about depression and loneliness and has been mentioned as maybe could be underlying causes for addiction. But how do these factors sort of form the link between an addict and a non-addict? And is your genes the answer to that? Because it doesn't mean that all of us who are lonely and depressed actually, you know, become right, addicts in some sense.
True. And then the same thing, we can say that not a genetic, not the only reason, because the person from the same family come from the same parents and exposed to the same environment, but they are not all of them become addicts or involved in addiction. It showed that it's several factors play a role in making this person to become an addict, be it genetic factors, the upbringing, the psychological factors from the aspect of the personality itself, the characteristic. Usually the person who have this, they are the one who are thrill-seeking individual who have maybe having the problem in delay, unable to, you know, face the delay in their gratification. Everything need to be, I mean, they want it now, they want it all, for example. So a lot of factors that contribute for the development of addiction, be it genetics, upbringing, so from that's the social part, the personality, and then also there are other agents like the peer pressure just now, the person who having psychiatric illness, they are more vulnerable to involve in addiction. I would say that bipolar disorder, you know, the bipolar disorder, yes, the person who have a fluctuation in terms of their mood, they are very much easily involved in substance addiction, usually the alcohol and other substance as well. So if we have a family history of addiction, meaning that we are has a higher risk to develop addiction, but it doesn't mean that we will develop one, because there are also some protective factors that the person may have. Again, live or stay in the environment that doesn't allow it to happen.
Right.
Have a protective family members or supportive friends and a good financial support, for example. So these are could be the protective factor. We also shouldn't forget the spiritual aspect of it. People who are much more spiritual, they are less likely to involve in a substance addiction or any behavioral addiction.
It almost sounds like all of us suffer from some sort of addiction anyway, isn't it?
That's right.
Look at the world. We're addicted to material wealth.
Yes.
We're addicted to, you know, everything.
Yes.
And we all need help at some stage. Yeah.
But I think this is a matter of which one is worth.
Yeah.
It's a matter of the spectrum. Yeah, I would say it's a spectrum.
And
so it is a spectrum then.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, Eugene, so you're having the Choose Hope Once It Changes Everything is the slogan for the campaign on the mental health. How does it relate to addiction? And, you know, Jesslyn did mention a little just now, but do you just, in your own words, just tell me from a lecturer's point of view, what you felt this campaign was all about?
Well, I thought choice, that being a very powerful word and a very powerful statement for our campaign this year, we believe that oneself, we have the control, we have the power to actually make that choice, and sometimes to let that addiction overrun our lives, to have that deleterious negative impact on our lives. That's also having a choice. That's you're letting, you're choosing the addiction take over, which is in itself a form of choice. So we want, through this campaign, to empower individuals to realize the importance of themselves, their own individual being, in not only helping themselves, but having the courage to seek additional information about what ails them, the addictions which they are currently suffering from, and to actually make that choice to be courageous enough to take the next step to get out of that addiction.
Jesslyn, you want to give me the details for the campaign? When is it, and, you know, where is it running?
Okay, our campaign is on 26th and 27th of October. It's next Saturday and Sunday at Viva Home. Mm-hmm. It's 10 a.m. morning until 9 a.m. We have exhibition, we have stage play, and we have our supporting partners like GRC, Gambling Rehab Centres. We have Pengasih, we have Malaysian Care, we have MMHA. We'll come and support our event as well. Mm-hmm. And we'll have some interactive games and activities that, like, for example, it's some games that put you in a situation that you can't text while driving, mm-hmm. or you can drive when you are alcohol, you drink or consume alcohol before that. We have some sort of interactive and exciting games. It's on Viva Home.
Where is Viva Home?
It's at Cheras.
Okay.
Yeah. 26th and 27th of October. It's next Saturday and Sunday.
Fantastic. And do we need to register? Is there a website that we can go on?
No, it's open to public, mm-hmm. so everyone can come and support us on that day.
Okay, I see you're on Twitter. World Mental Health Day is the hashtag.
Yes.
So if you'd like to follow them on Twitter, they are present there.
Us on Facebook. It's Help World Mental Health Day as well.
Okay. Yeah. Very proud that young people are getting involved in this, aren't you, Eugene?
Absolutely.
Dr. Hasley,
actually, this is we are from Malaysian Psychiatry Association. We are so happy with our involvement with HAP College for this event, because after the last year was the successful event last year, we also involved again this year. So as you said, it's such inspirational to see young people get involved in this event.
They ideally should be the ambassadors. No one else really.
Yes.
Jesslyn, how can societies, in your opinion, just to conclude, how can societies battle addiction proactively?
We aim to create a more positive and accepting Malaysia as well, as it's still a stigma there, like mental health patients, like, you have some mental health issue out there. So we aim to create a more positive and supporting society towards these people, because all of us need cares, everyone need attention, as we can provide a more positive environment for everyone else. I believe it's a better environment for everyone of us too.
Eugene?
Well, in order to create awareness, and in order to we got to start somewhere. I think you're right. I think it's very inspiring to see the young individuals take charge of this and just to stir up that awareness about what addiction actually is, and where as well individuals who are going through such problems can seek help. It's a matter of informing, not so much educating or telling, but telling them that help is available, assistance is made available, and we want to empower you so that you have the courage to actually seek an alternative to what is you're currently facing.
Dr. Hasley, how do societies battle addiction proactively?
Help people who want to seek help, support them, don't be judgmental, try to reduce stigma attached to it, don't discriminate them, consider them as, what if it happened to our family members? People who have a family members who are involved in addiction, they know this person is a good person, but they somehow being exposed to the substance that make their life change forever. Mm-hmm. So we have to support them. And then the first thing that everyone should do is to come to Viva next Saturday.
Yes.
And Sunday.
And to think of, you know, dopamine rather than stigmatizing the whole addiction thing. It is a chemical imbalance, after all. You know, if you look at it scientifically.
I also want the society, I mean, it's good that when people think that this is a medical condition, it's a brain disease, yes, we can do something
about it. Is it a disease? Would you say it's a disease?
Yeah, it's a disease. It's a disease. However, it also, that the person, we just cannot blame the brain, cannot blame because the person still has the responsibility to make it work, to recover from it. So that is the responsibility. We just cannot just, okay, this is the cause for it. There is a blame. We can blame the brain. We can blame the parents if you want to say this genetic. But at the end of the day, you have the responsibility, of course, helped by others in the society, to come up from it.
Yeah. Thank you all very much for joining me today. So Viva Home, 26th, 27th of October.
Yes.
Like them on Facebook, or you can even go on to Twitter, hashtag World Mental Health Day. That was Dr. Eugene T, business psychology lecturer, Dr. Hazli Zakaria, who's the honorary secretary of the Malaysian Psychiatric Association, Jeslyn Tan, who's the vice chairperson of the World Mental Health Day campaign on addiction, and Dr. Eugene and Jeslyn from Help University. Yes. On the bigger picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.